This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
And sorcerers, and welcome to another magical episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on filmschoolrejects.com. This is, of course, the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast that is so good, it's practically supernatural. Or exactly as natural as a podcast can be, I guess. There's a lot of them around.
Unnatural, artificially flavored.
Yes, yes, artificially sweetened. This is the most high fructose corn syrup of all the movie podcasts, and we appreciate you joining us. If you would like to hear more of the sticky sweet goodness of this podcast, which sounds way filthier than I intended it to, you can check us out on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, or like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And then, of course, if you really like the show, please consider becoming a patron, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. You can kick us a few bucks an episode, and we will kick you some bonus content that only you, as patrons, get to hear.
And then we nickname you Junkions.
Junkions, which is, of course, the greatest nickname of all time that we could have stolen from an animated movie in 1986.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, but we totally did that. So today...
Today's a special day.
On a very special Junk Food Cinema.
First of all, on a very special Junk Food Cinema, we are joined from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No.
A
no,
good...
No. Let's be serious.
A good, good friend of mine.
Okay, that part's true.
Yes.
But from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, I'm sorry. From St. Paul, Minnesota, we have one of the announcers for the Minnesota Roller Girls.
Minnesota Roller Girls, and for First Wrestling, yeah, I talk for, not a living, but for money on occasion.
Ladies and gentlemen, John Maddening is in the house.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Junk Food Cinema, but Brian already said that, so screw it.
Let's this go. Is my good friend Jeremy Stomberg, a.k.a. John Maddening, who actually literally surprised me, as me and Brian had not seen tonight's movie, so he came over to watch it, and halfway through the movie, my wife comes into the house with these two Minnesotans in tow who have driven down here to watch the small indie film I have coming out this weekend to come out and support this movie to help double the box office.
I heard it made $87 overseas. So I
80 something overseas.
Something like that. So we got the 3D IMAX tickets. So I think that'll help out a little bit.
It'll kick in the hat.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were just like, well, fuck it. You're on the show now. And tonight we're doing something else special in which we are talking about a movie we don't think is particularly good.
Full disclosure. Normally on this podcast, we have a rule that we don't just, you know, make fun of bad movies. What we do here is we are talking about movies worth watching for one reason or another. And if you use that umbrella of a description of this show, it still
qualifies.
Fits. Yeah,
there are we do highly recommend watching this movie. There are reasons to watch this movie.
Yeah.
There are so many reasons not to, but we're going to try to celebrate the reasons to watch this movie while also having fun with the reasons not to. But
there are reasons to floss too. It's not as fun.
No.
But, you know, but you should still do it.
But unlike flossing, we are going to talk about this movie.
Yes. This is one of the things is Dr. Mordred is a movie that is very hard to believe
that sentence
exists.
Right there. Dr. Mordred is a movie is the most dubious thing I think we've ever said on this podcast, but we are talking about...
It is 74 and a half minutes long, so it does qualify for feature film length.
Barely a movie, 1992's Dr. Mordred.
In a Manhattan apartment, Dr. M. Tom Mordred has stood guard between our world and the dark dimensions. Now, after centuries of waiting, evil's ultimate warrior has arrived.
It would be beyond the apocalypse.
Dr. Mordred, Master of the Unknown.
Which Cargill mentioned, we were, of course, talking about In the run-up to Doctor Strange being released this week, and Cargo, congratulations again. That seems like a big movie, I guess. So this movie, the reason that we are talking about it, and another reason that it definitely plays up to what we love about movies and how this podcast got started in the first place, this is a bad knockoff film.
Oh my God.
This may be, like, outside of Italy, the most egregious knockoff movie I have ever seen.
Yeah, it is. It is. The history of this film is just, it is shrouded in mystery, but it is also kind of obvious as fuck. Like, essentially what happened is Charles Band, who of course is a legend around junk food parts. Charles Band produced one of our favorite junk food cinema extravaganzas, a little movie called Eliminators. And of course created Full Moon, which is either your thing or not. Full Moon is kind of trauma for people who want to take their movies a little more seriously.
Trauma for people with the patience to do stop motion sequences, I feel, because that's in every single Blue Moon production.
Oh, yeah.
Full Moon production.
Yeah, no, it's...
I'm saying Blue Moon because that's really what I want to be drinking right now as we're talking about this movie, but it's Full Moon Productions.
Yeah, and it's... but yeah, so Charles Band had the rights. Okay, so let's go back in time a little bit.
Let's bend the space-time continuum and head back.
Let's go through time. We'll use a time gem. One of the Infinity Stones. And what we will do is we will go back to the 80s when Marvel Comics was one of the biggest things in media.
Now try and imagine that, folks, a time when Marvel was massively popular and huge.
Not the movies. This the movies can never work. And somebody convinced them to invest in a whole mess of junk bonds. And then the junk bond market cratered and devastated the company financially. They were going to go bankrupt. So in order to save the company, they did the one thing they could do, which is start selling the rights for everything.
Like, which is tantamount to a corporation committing prostitution.
Now, yes. Now, the thing is this has been heralded as one of those terrible decisions for a long
and
time.
And modded, in fact.
What?
Heralded and modded as a terrible decision.
Wah, wah. But I want to give a small defense to this, because something no one ever brings up is this created a whole bunch of disasters. The most notable disaster was like six or seven different companies got different vague versions of rights to Spider-Man. So, and that led to one company owning the rights to make a Spider-Man movie and one company owning the rights to put out Spider-Man videos, but they couldn't make a movie, but the people who had the movie rights couldn't ever put it on video, and everybody wanted a big box of money from everyone else.
You got your TV rights and my film rights. You got your film rights and my TV rights. I'll sue you both.
Now, the cool thing that came out of this is a bunch of the places that bought these rights were video game companies. And this is how we got a bunch of really cool video games like the X-Men and the Avengers. And, you know, ultimately, you know, that ended up leading to Marvel versus Capcom and that whole series eventually. Like, we got a lot of really interesting video games out of it. But movie-wise, it led to a clusterfuck that gave us a bunch of mediocre to bad movies early, you know, in the aughts, and led to Marvel starting to consolidate all the rights back. But in the 90s, you had Constantine Films, which picked up the Fantastic Four, famously made their Ashcan movie, which they never planned on releasing, with Roger Corman, and then keeping the rights around to then make three more terrible Fantastic Four movies. Everybody keeps blaming Fox for it, but Constantine Films is the link in all four of these fuck-ups. But so Charles Band had somehow managed to get the rights to Doctor Strange, I guess because everyone was like, who the fuck cares about Doctor Strange? Well, whatever happened, he ended up losing the rights, but he had already put the movie into production, into, you know, pre-production. And Charles Band is a lot like, you know, people like Jason Blum, who are just like, look, if we've spent $10,000 on this movie already, we're making the movie. I'm not dumping $10,000. We're going to go all the way. We're all in. In for a penny, in for a pound. And so he was like, fuck it. We're going to rewrite portions of this movie. I.e. change the names of characters and make our fucking Doctor Strange movie anyway. And so what resulted was Doctor Strange became a kind of boring police procedural peppered with amazing moments.
Yeah, this movie, by the skin of its enormous sleeve,
by the hoary hosts of
avoids plagiarism. It's so crazy to me that this is someone attempting to make Doctor Strange, realizing they can't make Doctor Strange, and saying, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway, and then pulling some Unsolved Mysteries reenactment. The names have been changed to protect the executives.
Dr. Not Strange.
No.
Dr. Anton Mordred.
Yes. Dr. AM, which sounds like a fucking DJ that you listen to on your way to work.
Yes.
Beep, 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 beep. Dr. AM. What? Magic time on the radio.
And to be fair, the most magical part of this movie. I did not mean that pun to come out. I apologize.
Hey-o.
I apologize.
Because now it happens by accident.
That's exactly what happened. God damn it. No, but in a stroke of wonderful casting, if you were going to make a Doctor Strange movie in 1992, Jeffrey fucking Combs.
Especially if you are Full Moon and you're making a Doctor Strange movie and you've basically already signed Jeffrey Combs to a 50-picture deal, he's sitting there waiting. Why the hell not? He'll take your call. As a turn, no one else will. If you look at the collected rest of this cast, but the rest of this cast,
like it's like this is usually the part where me and Brian find some really cool obscure character actor in here that we're gonna pull out and go, yeah, but you're gonna be paying attention to Jeffrey Combs. You know who's really awesome? Yeah, not this time, friendo.
Yeah, it was one of those things where you're just like, well, you couldn't get Nicole Kidman and you couldn't get Peter Boyle, but you got a reasonable non-union equivalent.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, you know what? I'm wrong.
There's one other person.
There is one other person worth noting, and it is
it's Brian Thompson.
Brian fucking Thompson, aka Nuke from Superman 4.
Also the Night Stalker leader from Cobra, so he's Junk Food alum, and soon to be, I'm sure, Junk Food alum for his role as Shao Kahn in Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
We cannot talk about Annihilation.
No, because it's atrocious.
It's you know what? It makes this look like Doctor Strange.
It is. I don't know what the opposite of a flawless victory is, like overloaded with flawed defeat, but that's what that movie is.
We call it a Trumpence.
It's a Trumpence. It gets uppercut right into the Trumpence, that movie does. So, yeah, that's not a movie we're talking about, but Dr. Mordred is, despite its best efforts to be unwatchable, kind of fucking watchable.
Oh, no, it is. Well, first of all, as I mentioned before, 74 and a half minutes, a briskly paced movie that by the time you get to like the first act turn, the movie's half fucking over.
When you say briskly, what you mean is ostensibly still a film.
It is. Well, look, you know what? It never stops.
It
does occasionally go into slow motion for no apparent reason but to pad out the film.
Yeah, if it could stop, it definitely would. It would find a way to just freeze frame for 5 minutes. But that would be really prescient, because then they could be like, oh, people in the future will think that their DVDs, which is not a thing that exists yet, are skipping. Or I guess in 1992, they'll think the tape got stuck. I don't know. But if they could have found a way to just stop entirely to pad out that runtime, I feel like they would have done that. And also, Brian Thompson in this movie playing Cabal, the villain who's got Billy Ray Cyrus's barber, he's kind of got like that Clancy Brown from Highlander thing.
Oh, that's exactly what this was based on.
He's not the Kurgan, but he's a Kurgan, I feel. Like that's kind of what he's going for in this.
He's Kurgan-esque.
He's Kurgan-esque. Kurgan adjacent, I feel. And he's going up against Jeffrey Combs as Dr. Landlord, I think is
Dr.
his character.
Dr. Anton Mordred.
Because the most
master of the mystic arts and also landlord to the police character.
But here's
the
craziest part of that is they tell us from frame one, with we see the eyes out in space, that he is a mystical sorcerer. So that's not a surprise. What is withheld from the audience until the end of the first act is that he's the landlord of this building, because who the fuck cares? But that's the big surprise is, by the way, not only is he a sorcerer, he's also kind of a slumlord, I guess. What?
Yeah, that is actually one of the weirder moments of the movie. Is not like I actually like the fact that he's the landlord. The idea is that he's owned this building for 100 years, and like he's always like hiding off in his.
Mr. Torrance, you've always been here.
Yeah, no, but he's living off in his little large section of the building, and then he rents out the rest, and nobody really sees him, so nobody realizes he's not fucking aging. Like I get that, but my issue there is. She agrees not to tell any of the other tenants that he's actually the landlord if he actually fixes her broken garbage disposal, which for fuck's sake, you're a master of fucking magic and you can't get a garbage disposal fixed. What the fuck is wrong
with
you?
When you look at all this evidence, what does it lead to? Knock, knock, who's there, slumlord? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've got the magic roofie amulet, but what I don't have is the ability to fix your fucking garbage disposal.
Glory hosts of handymanism or something, yeah.
This is something I feel like we need to address right now is, I know your movie's coming out and I'm super excited about it. I know next to fuck all about Doctor Strange. So I feel like in order to really get the full impact of this plagiaristic movie, we need to know the elements of Doctor Strange that are, one, canon, and two, showing up in facsimile in this movie.
Okay, so one of the things this movie does not rip off is Doctor Strange's origin. Like, they create a whole new origin story for this doctor. Doctor Strange, in the comics, is a skilled surgeon who is in a car accident. His hands get fucked up. He can't be a surgeon anymore. He goes to find healing somewhere in the world. He's lost. He wanders into an ashram in Tibet, and there is someone named the Ancient One there who then goes and sees the potential in him, teaches him the mystic arts, and he ends up eventually becoming Sorcerer Supreme, the defender of Earth against multiverse threats.
Now, Sorcerer Supreme is like a regular sorcerer with sour cream and jalapenos.
That is the joke that we've been telling for 30 years, yes.
Well, I've just gotten on board this train, Cargill, okay? If I didn't know about it, the joke is new to me. That's my defense.
The Sorcerer Supreme also comes with cheese.
Oh, thank God.
No, but Sorcerer Supreme is the job of the guy. It is the head honcho of the dude or woman in charge of guarding the Earth against multiverse threats. Like, that is what they do. They guard the Earth dimension, and that is their job. And so... Doctor Strange, what was great about Doctor Strange is it was this really surreal, weird, otherworldly comic that the art was very inspired by psychedelic art of the time and became a very popular comic book with stoners acid heads of the late 60s and early to mid 70s. And there's been lots of denial of like, yeah, no, we weren't playing to that. We were all clean, and which, you know, I generally believe that they were. But they've kind of been like, no, we were just trying to make something cool, and this culture tapped into it. And it's like, yeah, no, there's this super awesome Doctor Strange blacklight poster from the 70s that pretty much says otherwise.
Well, that in that classic storyline, Doctor Strange in the Cavern of the Tripping Balls. So I feel like that was a dead giveaway.
That was kind of a giveaway. But yeah, but the thing is what was so cool about Doctor Strange was he was super powerful. And the things he was going up against are the most powerful beings in the universe. So stories were rarely, you know, as Chuck Wendig says, spandex, capey, punchy, fighty. It was very much about him having to talk his way out of or outthinking his enemies, like tricking these interdimensional entities into doing, going against their own, you know, ends, or trapping themselves in their own spaces or what have you. Like it was always about this guy who is just really clever and really smart fighting against these other dimensional forces. And that's what was so interesting about it was kind of the nerdy nerd comic book, which is why it was never like, even amongst comic book fans, he was kind of a second tier character and never popular. Now, never really popular in the 70s and 80s was he only sold 500,000 comics a month, which of course, if you know, you were selling that now, you'd be the number one comic in the world. But he was like down in the rungs, but they were always selling enough that they're like, well, yeah, let's keep doing it. So he was always around and alive, and his series would get ended and they'd restart the series and reboot it. But Marvel was never really able to find out exactly what to do with him, because so many writers have a problem with dealing with that power level. Because when you introduce him to elements like the Avengers, you'd end up like with this famous scene where, I think it's Madame Hydra is holding up this briefcase that has exactly what she wanted. She's like, ha, 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 I have it. And it cuts to the frame of Doctor Strange holding it up going, what are you talking about? And then you cut back to her and she's holding nothing in her hand. It's like you get to a point where when you're dealing with mundane threats, Doctor Strange just kind of snaps his fingers and like, oh yeah, no, I totally fucked you up 5 minutes ago when you had no
idea. Strange is like, I got to remember to go back in time and take the briefcase before she gets it. Whoa, it's done.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in the comics before Bill and Ted that makes me think that Bill and Ted, you know, that was like, oh, dude, what if, you know.
Do you mean the ultimate stoner comedy of all time may have been influenced by the ultimate stoner superhero of all time?
I think that might be a possibility. I don't know for sure.
Well, speaking of next level nerdy nerds, Jeremy, what is your experience with Doctor Strange? Is he a favorite character of yours? And when did you see this Mordred character for the first time?
There's a lot of Doctor Strange that I started reading Doctor Strange comics. I was a big Marvel kid growing up. When Marvel started doing their Marvel Tales, where they went back and reprinted certain panels from old books and kind of had this great chronology from the beginning of the Marvel Universe and showed what was happening at that point in time from various comics series. So you'd say, oh, here Captain America was in World War II, and then the Invaders were here, and then eventually here came the Fantastic Four, and then came Spider-Man. They would show a couple panels of things with some text to bridge it to the next story. And I think Doctor Strange had been a guest star in various books that I'd read, but I never really understood him until I started reading these Marvel. I think it's called Marvel Tales. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Marvel Tales, Fievel Goes West, yeah, exactly. Into the Nether Realms. Yeah, 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 I read 100% them.
100% right there, Brian, as always.
Comics.
but then I just started taking a look at various old comics and found that the ones from the late 60s, early 70s were probably the coolest ones, the Marvel pop art era, just because it was so bizarre. And as Cargo was saying earlier, the main problem with him is people trying to get a grasp of exactly what he could do, when it seemed to be more fun when you had just a general idea of what he could do. I had not seen until maybe about 5 or 6 years ago the 1978 movie, TV movie, which was, if you think Dr. Mordred is bad.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a reason we decided to talk about Dr. Mordred instead of that one, because that was a lot of that old TV stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Was just very hampered and sad and just never really connected.
Do you think there's something inherently sad about Reb Brown playing Captain Oh, yeah. No. I just heard it out loud, and you're absolutely right.
Well, and that was the second, right? That was because I think the Spider-Man one came first, and then Doctor Strange, and then Captain America.
And they did Captain America 1 and 2. Like, right, they had right. Two Captain America movies.
So, like, at least the Spider-Man one got a series, at least a season.
And the Captain America one was just this guy driving around in a creepy van, like getting
van
into adventures.
And a motorcycle and a Lucite shield.
Because if there's one thing you want Captain America to be doing, it's riding around in a van. A guy in spandex just riding around in a van.
But he did around that time in the comics. He was kind of traveling around. This was after he was moving around with the Falcon. But we're talking about Doctor Strange.
And then there was Trial
here.
Of Bruce Banner, exactly, where Daredevil and Thor show up.
But he is nobody has gotten a really great grasp on him, I think, since the 60s, since the original Ditko comics, in my opinion, with the exception of this one book,
Triumph and Torment.
Yep.
Triumph and Torment, baby. Now, The Oath is really great, too, but Triumph and Torment is well above The Oath.
Where Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom are in hell.
They are in Supernatural Medical School.
Yep. No, Doctor Doom shows up. Here's the pitch. If you've never read a Doctor Strange comic, this is the one to pick up, and I'm going to pitch it to you why.
Pitch it. You already got the job. The movie's coming out, but go ahead and pitch again.
Doctor Doom comes to Doctor Strange and says, I need your help. Like, I'm cutting out a preamble. So people are like, well, actually, there was a complication. Where Doctor Doom
put your tweets down.
And says, I need you to help. My mother's soul is trapped in hell. I need to go in and get her. I need you to go with me. And Doctor Strange takes Doctor Doom into hell to battle Mephisto to save the soul of Doctor Doom's mother. And the entire comic is drawn by Mike Mignola, who had yet to do Hellboy yet. So this is him in his first foray into hell in this fantastic fucking comic that is just amazing. And if you've never read a Doctor Strange comic and you want to know what Doctor Strange is all about, pick up Triumph and Torment. You can find it at any comic shop. You can get it off Amazon. It's the trade paperback's been in print forever because it's that fucking good.
And strangely enough, they're bringing it back.
See, it's happening by accident. I'm telling you, we've gotten to that level.
Over the past couple of weeks, when I've gone to the comic shop on Wednesdays, there have been more and more older Doctor Strange books that are back in print. So that's certainly one that is easy to pick up, and it's a quick read. And if you get the right one, there is a nice little older story in the back as well.
And if you dig through this conversation at the very bottom, you'll find the movie we are and are not talking about, which is Dr. Mordred, which should give you some idea of the quality level we are working with this ripoff of Dr. Strange.
So Dr. Mordred's origin is that these two otherworldly kids were brought up together.
It's basically Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes from the new G.I. Joe movies.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. It's that story. So, we know who our audience is. You guys already know what that story is. You know, they're of similar power levels. One goes down a dark road. One goes down the road of light. And then Dr. Mordred gets sent by the flying eye creature who is essentially
Orson. Yeah. Mork and Mindy.
Orson from Mork and Mindy has
what is this to Earth. What is this a reference to in the comics? What character is this kind of I guess an amalgam of it, or is it?
It's I would guess that it's the Vashanti. Like it is the three it's kind of a reference to the three spirits of the Vashanti, which are the three most
which is wait no it's bourbon it's brandy and it vodka is that is it, no. no okay
so they they're the ones who give Doctor Strange a lot of his magic. I believe it's Oshtar, it's Hoggoth and Agamotto.
I like that reroute that you just did where it's like, I'm not even going to pretend I don't know who these characters are, because for fuck's sake, of course I know who these characters are.
So, but they're the ones who, you know, he gets a lot of his spells invoke them in the comics. And so that's essentially like he would be in touch with the spirits of the Vashanti quite often for guidance. And so that's kind of what this is an amalgam of just this one being and monitor, as he calls it. It's it's kind of lame,
which might mean he's just crazy and talking to his early 90s computer.
It could be. But so he was sent,
it's a screensaver.
He was sent to Earth to protect Earth from, because they eventually stopped Cabal, and Cabal has been sent to the dark dimension, one of the things they did not scrub away from from the film.
Which, judging by Cabal's haircut, the dark dimension is Switzerland.
Look, first of all, you keep mentioning there are some glorious fucking mullets in this movie.
Oh my god!
Everyone who isn't a cop has a mullet. Like, that is just,
you're forgetting. I mean, you're younger than Cargill and myself.
This is true. I have produced my birth certificate.
That was cool back then.
It was edgy to have, you know, like, in fact, at my high school, I was amongst the first students that were allowed to have a mullet, because up until like 2 years before I got there, they still enforced the if your hair touches your collar, we cut it for you rule.
Where the hell did you go to school?
Texas.
Oh, right.
In the 80s. For fuck's sake.
Taxes.
And the guys won even in the 80s.
Wow. Yeah, and we finally did, and we could finally rock mullets, and then we learned our lesson, because as it turns out, we never should have had them to begin with. But yes, like, there is a kid in this, like a 10-year-old kid with the world's most glorious mullet. Like, it is just glowy and magical. But yeah, so...
That kid is a big fan of Brooks and or Dunn.
I would say both.
Probably both.
So, yeah, so he... Kabul.
Kabul? Like,
I know, just fuck.
You're mixing your movies up. You're mixing, yes, Cabal.
Cabal has been locked away in the dark dimension and is under guard, but we know he's probably going to break out. So rather than reinforcing the guard to make sure he doesn't break out or just killing him, we're going to send Jeffrey Combs to live on Earth for 100 or 150 years, depending on which part of the movie you've gotten to.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
It's like an over-the-top where Stallone's name keeps changing between Lincoln Hawk and Lincoln Hawks. It's like, depending on which part of the movie you're watching, his name will be different. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So he just kind of sits around in his apartment building being a shitty landlord.
Can we talk for a moment about his apartment? And I know this is a weird thing to harp on.
Oh, no.
But what the fuck is going on with this apartment?
Well, which part do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about the neon, or do you want to talk about his pet? Do you want to talk about the special cloakroom he has?
So many things. But actually, what I want to first talk about is his weird James Bond villain Thunderball map that he has on his entire wall. It is not a wall-mounted map. It is a map the size of a fucking wall.
And note that this is a two-story apartment, essentially.
Yes.
Like, there is... A loft, and it is a giant fucking wall. And thank Christ, everything that happens that he needs to map out on the wall happens in the lower hemisphere, so he never has to use a magical stepladder.
Yeah, Jeffrey Combs ain't marking anything in the Arctic Circle. Let's just put it that way. It is far
not
too...
not even marketing anything in Ecuador, for fuck's sake. It is literally true. It is Brazil. Yes, he can reach up to Brazil. South America. Can we do South America?
My favorite fucking part of that is the event that he's mapping out. They show us and tell us happens in Rio de Janeiro. And then he hears about it on the news, talking about this thing that happened in Rio de Janeiro, breaks out a sextant like he's on the fucking bounty all of a sudden, maps out the coordinates, figures out that it's, spoiler alert, Rio de Janeiro, and then puts the pin on the map in Rio. Like, you added a step that was completely unnecessary. You were supposed to be the world's greatest sorcerer, and you literally can't just take information that was told to you and put a pin in a map.
Nobody said he was the world's greatest cartographer.
This is true.
I also love that his television station, which is in English, is talking about news about an armored car theft in Rio de Janeiro.
You know, like CNN does all the time.
Cities in the world.
And on the lighter side, things still suck in Rio. Patty, back to you.
They'll never be able to pull off the Olympic Games in 26 years, I don't think.
Yes, it's just like, once again, we want to remind you, there's no way in the future the Olympics will ever be held here. Patty, back to you.
So he's got this giant, ridiculous map that serves no purpose.
Yeah, that's just the centerpiece of the room. We got so much more to dig into just in this apartment.
He's got a clock with neon around it because it was the early 90s and that's what you did.
I was expecting like a Patrick Nagel print. I mean, really, above all, if we're going to really
it was kind of there, yeah.
That, yeah.
Instead, you know where you find that? You find that in I Come in Peace.
This is true. And there are CDs stuck into it for some reason. I'm guessing, okay, he's got all of these tomes, all these volumes of books that I'm sure that if you slide those bookshelves aside, there are just mountains of cocaine just taking up residence behind the bookshelves. And he's got a pet raven.
Before we get to...
We got to go back to the cocaine?
No.
Because I'll go back to the cocaine as much as we need to.
He has a special hidden room where he keeps his blue cloak.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this for a second.
It's essentially his really shitty version of the Cloak of Limitation and his really shitty version of the Eye of Agamotto.
Yeah, his Cloak of Invisibility, whatever.
And he keeps that hidden in the weirdest room known to fucking man.
And here's the thing. What, just like the cartography lesson that he gave us, unnecessary is this extra hidden room because his apartment is sealed like a bank vault with an electronic, like, pin code, so it's already a secure room in which he has a secret, even more secure room?
And I feel like it's a Liberace closet, like, it's like, this is his dark, dirty secret, is that he really likes capes and jewelry.
Really goes with my handbag.
But so
my Liberace is just Paul Lynde, guys.
So of course, for some reason, instead of having, you know, the manservant Wong, as he was back in the day, he has his protector is a raven.
Yeah. And by a protector, it's really just an annoying pet
that dances around and caws a lot. Like, yeah, that's all it does.
That's all it does. It serves no function in the story. There's not a moment where he has to, like, send a message or the crow is, like, sad. That, you know, it's just,
or
like,
the crow
nothing
transforms into another character where it's like, oh, shit, you were really a badass female protector all along.
That crow is just taking up room, like the fucking giant map on the wall, which also, by the way, amounts to nothing.
And what's the name of this raven?
Oh, let's be real subtle. Let's be real clever with this shit. Its name is Edgar. Get it, folks? Oh. Do you just fucking get it?
No. And if you don't get it later on,
oh, we're gonna hammer it home.
His full name is Edgar Allan.
Edgar Allan Mordred, I guess, is its full name.
Yeah.
Edgar Allan.
And while we're talking about ridiculousness,
said the rest of this episode.
How about how magical his smoking jacket bowling robe is?
It's a bowling robe!
That's monogrammed AM for it Anton Mordred.
DJ AM. It is a fucking golden robe that, unless his other assistant is a fluffer, should not be on a man just walking around his house. And you take one look at it, and it's like, the only other place I could think that you would wear that is if you were doing, like, casual bowling. Because that's what it looks like, a bowling robe. It is the weirdest thing I have ever
formal
seen.
Bowling. Formal bowling. As opposed to formal bowling.
Well, yeah. I mean, where you wear clothes and not a fucking smoking jacket. But, yeah. So that's his apartment. I think we fully covered the ridiculousness of his apartment. Now let's just dive into the rest of the movie.
Which is not much longer. Like, we just
covered 30 minutes of this movie.
Yeah. And, yeah, it is, like, literally what happens is he lives next door to a woman who is a consultant about cults and Satanism for the police department.
Now, if you didn't catch what Cargill just said, don't worry, because she'll remind you 15 times in this fucking movie what she does for a living.
And this movie will remind you as well. Like, the first time, you know, somebody knocks on her door and goes, "You're a police officer."
No, I'm actually just a consultant. "Well, you should arrest her." "Well, I'm not a police officer. I'm just a consultant." "Well, you should put her in jail." "Well, I'm not a..." Like, oh my God.
And then when the police officer's there, they're like, "Hey, don't I know you from the 10th precinct?" "Yeah, I'm a cop just like you."
It's like, Jesus.
Like, God damn it, make up your fucking mind.
It's like bad improv. It's just, this is a movie full of bad improv.
It's, yeah, at moments, it's exactly what it is. And so she ends up finding out that he's kind of an expert in this stuff. And so so he might be someone she can tap into later. And then there's a mysterious cult-like murder. And she goes, "You know, my neighbor knows a lot about this stuff. You should go and consult with him." And so they go and just fucking arrest him.
Whoops.
They're like, "Fuck it. We don't like the cut of this guy's jib." And so, of course, Anton Mordred, genius sorcerer, the man sent here to protect our world, is ranting like a fucking crazy man.
It reminds me of the scene of him in The Frighteners.
Yeah.
When he's in the police station, but he's playing like a completely bent, occult, obsessed FBI agent, and he's just like mumbling to himself about like patterns and demons. That's what he seems like as soon as he gets in this police station. And leading up to this, what is hilarious to me is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Mystery Science Theater movie, but when they're watching This Island Earth, there's all these moments in that terrible movie where the characters of Exeter and Brackle say things like, "Oh, your composer," or, "Oh, I'm not familiar with the Bach," or whatever. And the robots will say things like, "Oh, I'm not an alien." It's exactly that, but an immortal. He says things like, she's like, "Oh, this building's been here for 100 years. I wonder what it was like to live back then." And he's like, "It was pretty great." She's like, "What?" He goes, "I imagine it was pretty great." And you and I were just like, "No, I'm not an immortal."
Not an immortal. Sidebar, This Sidebar. Island Earth is actually a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's been the version that is on the Mystery Science 3000 version is a touring version that they used to do, which they butchered up to make it seem much more incoherent.
It's the mutant version of the
It actually
film.
It's actually a very coherent, good classic 50s sci-fi movie.
Hot takes.
That does have a bunch of goofiness to it because it's a 50s sci-fi.
The most controversial opinion we will have in this episode, This Island Earth is a good movie. Junk food cinema.
Yeah, but I'm not alone.
No, I totally agree. And I actually, the first time I saw it was at the Uptown Theater when the original cast of Mystery Science Theater did it in, 1990 or 1991. And then when it, I felt actually kind of cheated when the Mystery Science Theater movie came out in 95 or so when Joel just did it. Or so when Mike just did it, it was the same thing. It was a lot of the same jokes. It was still funny, but it was even shorter because they had to keep the entire movie to about 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had like a 2-hour show that was then cut down to 90 minutes, and so the movie just got progressively shorter and shorter and shorter as time went by. But yeah, I eventually went and saw the actual film, and it's great. It's super fun.
Yeah. So back to Dr. Mordred.
I guess we have to go back to the movie we're talking about for sure. You know what I think is interesting is if you watch this movie, it is one actual Maniac Cop away from being a Maniac Cop movie.
Dude,
all of the other pieces of a Maniac
what is
Cop.
It missing?
It's missing the actual fucking Matt Cordell Maniac Cop. Other than that, it's the exact same setup.
There is one actor who's trying very hard to be Robert Davi.
Oh, yes.
He is, like, it's a movie that where the acting is so bad, you wish you had the experience of Robert Davi.
Yeah, when you're pining
you're
for
like,
the,
you know what
the zenith
needed?
Of talent.
Robert Davi here.
Yeah.
It needed Peter Boyle for a scene.
Yeah.
Like, it needed, you know, just a few people. Like, I feel like it. And I feel like Robert Davi, there should have been that moment that was like from Wayne's World 2, where they're like, I know this is a small character, but we can do better than this,
we can do better than
and
this,
And they bring
right?
in Charlton Heston. I felt like they should have like interrupted the movie and said, all right, you know what? We're really sorry. Here's Robert Davi doing the same dialogue. And then it would be like, this is fucking great.
But
Robert Davi fucking rules. This guy's no Robert Davi.
Yeah. We unfortunately could not jump on the Robert Davi train for this, but it's got the character that is assumed to be the murderer who's kind of at the heart of all this. It's got a super. By the way, Jeffrey Combs kind of looks like Bruce Campbell from that first Maniac Cop movie. In this, you've got the cop that believes him. You've got everybody else who's trying to arrest him. The supernatural threat that he's trying to take down. It is essentially just one zombie Robert Zadar away from being a Maniac Cop sequel, and we haven't even gotten to the fucking scene in the museum.
Oh no, because that's the climax. Like we're so close to the end of the
which
movie
will
already,
fool you.
And
it
we've
will
described
fool you.
The plot.
Well, it'll fool you that it's the climax because it's the first time the villain and the hero are in the same room together, and it's the final fight.
And the final fight is fucking cool, and it does exactly like because you had not seen this.
No.
And you had no idea what was about to happen, and you just see that they're in a museum, and you see dinosaur skeletons, and you just said, yeah, that would be cool if they had money, but there's no money in the budget for that, and then all of a sudden, they're shooting magic out of their fucking hands.
To be fair, after I said it and saw that it was happening, I was still right. They did not have the money in the budget to make that happen. So I'm trying to piece together what happens between Jeffrey Combs getting arrested for this murder because the symbol on the victim matches the amulet that he wears, the Ruhypnol amulet, as we've called it, and getting to this scene with the stop motion dinosaurs.
The only thing that happens, what happens in between there is he gets interrogated by not Robert Davi.
True.
So not Dr. Strange gets interrogated by not Robert Davi. And then,
Cabal has his henchmen. That in the strangest...
He turns immortal for 12 hours,
yep.
And then changes his mind
and
later.
And in just possibly the strangest plan one has ever seen, he has the henchman go and get arrested by throwing a Molotov cocktail into a cop car behind the precinct house. So this guy is arrested, and then he instantly escapes.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things like... Well, in like 2012, all these movies came out.
Escape. Wow. He gets arrested to go to the police station,
and then he yells at
Dr. Mordred
for a bit.
And then he gets put in his cell, ostensibly to have some kind of cool sequence there. But then Dr. Mordred escapes, and so he escapes too.
Yeah, it's essentially like that trend in 2012 where you had all these blockbuster movies where part of the plot was that the villain would intentionally get captured and then do something at the place where they were kept. Except no plan at all.
Like Benedict Cumberbatch
for one, like Javier Bardem for another. There was seriously like a trend for a while of this happening over and over again in blockbusters. And this is like that if the person got there and went, I'm sorry, what was the plan again? Why was I supposed to get myself caught?
He had no ultimate plan. The plan was, let's get arrested and see what the fuck happens. And so then he just...
His only superpower really, besides the I'm in Mario 3 and I've gotten the star, so I have 20 seconds of invincibility, is that he looks like the lead singer from Extreme. And that's his only other superpower in the film. So it's like, I'm not even sure why we trusted this guy to do anything in the first place.
His name is Gary Cherone, thank you.
Do you actually fucking know that?
Well, yeah, because he then... he was the lead singer for Van Halen after Sammy Hagar left, and after David Lee Roth left the second time, right?
Yeah. How many times have you seen The Replacements live?
Well, once, because the first time was they haven't played a show since 1989 when I was in ninth grade, and then I saw them last year.
That is Jeremy, aka DJ Fact Check. Beep, 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 beep. That's amazing.
I hadn't actually realized that he was just giving me shit. So I was actually coming up with an actual answer for
him. No, not on this show, not on this fucking show.
This is the world's most rhetorical podcast.
Well, if you subtract the total of
So dinosaur fossil fight, which is, if there's any reason to watch this movie aside from the just what the fuckery of a Marvel knockoff movie. It is a stop motion fucking dinosaur fossil fight.
And it's done in this, it looks like a community theater production of Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park hadn't come out yet. So
there was nothing to live up to in the world of effects.
It's not like they were even, you could even go, oh, that's funny. Yeah. They were riffing on that. No, it's literally, it looks the same, but you're right. It looks like the community theater version of that big foyer in the center of the
visitor center in the original Jurassic Park film. And you walk in and it's like, oh, okay. And no, those aren't real skeletons. Those are really bad.
Yeah, I also love that in this museum, everything is crammed into that foyer. All of the exhibits are, like, there are dinosaurs, there's a suit of armor, there's apparently, like, the paperweight of Anubis is in there for some reason, which is what our villain is after, which I'm not even sure what the fuck it does.
Erlenmeyer flasks, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Oh,
so much.
And then there are two rent-a-cops who, once they see giant animated dinosaurs,
oh god,
fossil dinosaurs, start shooting just randomly at it. Well, and then one of them...
people are shooting randomly throughout this entire... every cop has the just hairiest of hair triggers.
Oh god, yeah. Like, it's like a 50s movie in that way. Like, remember like those really bad old movies where the cops would walk around like with their guns drawn and like be pointing at each other while they're talking?
Yeah, that was called Miami Vice.
Yeah. This is it. This hits those moments where it's...
You came up to for my birthday this year. We went to, and saw Strangers on a Train.
Oh,
and
yes, we did.
The end of Strangers on a Train has this exact same thing where they're hunting a bag. Strangers on a Train, a fantastic, one of the pinnacles of cinema, and the cops run in. They see a guy on a merry-go-round, so they just shoot at him. And they hit the merry-go-round operator because they just fire.
Well, carnies are expendable. We've known that in cinema for years.
But yeah, the rent-a-cops, because Campbell, I used to call him Kurgan. Cabal. What the hell is his name? Cabal. Yeah, Cabal.
DJ Fact Check.
He gets in there. He gets into this this museum and creeps out a mom and her kid. And then the
creeps out or creeps on
a little from column A, a little from column B, and the security guards come through and say, "All right, everybody leave," and then they walk out before Cabal leaves. And I just thought this was the most Minnesotan museum of all time. They have to be asked once, and then everyone will leave.
We don't need to enforce it; it's just going to happen naturally.
They walk out, leaving the creepy guy behind, where he can cause trouble.
Yeah, and so then, you know, the cops are firing wantonly at these fucking things.
He's shooting the T-Rex in the dick.
And then if you
follow the line of the gun,
bites him and he turns into clay.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this stop motion dinosaur is whipping around this clay police officer.
Effects by kind of okay Harryhausen.
It's like nine years after Return of the Jedi had pretty much the same scene with the Grimorian guard, and I don't know how many years after Harryhausen. And these guys cannot do this to save their life.
And the cracks in the Play-Doh are visible from space.
Oh my God, it's so good. That sequence just always has me in tears. It's so good.
And this is this is the final fight of the movie, audience.
Yeah, it feels like, I mean, where the timing is and where the pacing in the movie is, you're like, oh, this is the part where Cabal is actually going to win. We're going to have the false victory.
Yeah, we're 62 minutes in.
Yeah, and we're going to be like, we've got to get, you know, get this over with. We got to knock this, you know, stop this guy. And Cabal gets distracted. He's like, ha ha ha, I've totally won. And then Doctor, not Strange, goes, there's one thing you didn't anticipate. And his dinosaur just gores him.
Not a mastodon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just fucking gores him. And it's like, oh shit. Oh, this is the part where we think he's dead, but he's not. No, he's dead. Like, that's it. The movie's over. Like, just like that. All of a sudden, our villain is dead, and then we have to go with this sappy, stupid, like, really super cheesy, we shot it in the park on a Saturday afternoon ending.
But then we see why Cabal actually gave that guy the power, so he could go and kill Dr. Mordred, who is now in his astral form, or not his astral form, his knockoff astral form.
Yes. His spirit form.
His nappy sleepy time form.
He's sleeping in Central Park. And the dude comes up with a knife, and in the long, it's like almost like this Shakespearean soliloquy timing as he raises the knife and he tells the police officer woman what he's going to do, and she tries to stop him when he could have just stepped up and just chop 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 done.
Yeah, he could have just, like, Edward James almost him and stabbed him, like, 15 times before she would have even caught wind of what was going on. But there's this weird moment, too, right before he goes into comatose superpower mode, where he basically tells the female love interest, like, I'm just going to be laying
love
here.
Interest.
She's an interest. Like, she's a person scene. Of interest, I guess. But he's basically like, this I'm just like going to be laying here. You can do whatever you want to me.
This is like the creepiest, most chemistry-free romance I've seen in a film.
Come to
recently.
My apartment. I've got all these books and a giant map. Do you like birds?
I'm just going to go to sleep here. I'm safe. You can do whatever you want to my body, my mortal coil.
Check out this room. I keep a cape in it.
My raven. His name's Edgar.
Get it.
In fact, she is tasked with, as he has to go off into the astral dimension or wherever the fuck he's fucking off to with Monitor.
He poochies out of there.
My planet needs me.
My planet needs me. And he said, well, I'll be back someday.
Take care of Edgar Allan for me, and then we cut to this.
She had the keys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. By the way, it's locked. We've established by a pin pad, and he never gives her that fucking code. So I don't know how she got in there.
Yeah, but so Mr. she's Gross. In there, Mr. and Gross. So then we have this sappy kind of Christmas. I'm so depressed, and then he shows back up, and we're happy ending.
Can we? Okay. Look, I get it. I get that you're a 72-minute movie. I get that I have bought gifts from Tiffany's that weren't this neatly wrapped by the end of things, but could you maybe explain why the fuck he left and then why he didn't have to leave after
really?
All?
Really? That's the big question you
yeah,
have?
Yeah, because your fucking hero.
There are so many questions.
The hero's just like, well, we won. Goodbye, I guess. And then, never mind.
Gotta leave something open for Dr. Mordred, too.
I've heard of the save the cat in screenwriting. I've never heard of the never mind, I'm back.
Yeah, it's kind of the whole movie is a fucking cop out of on all levels, and it's just like I feel like that when they went to change the script, rather than doing actual rewrites, they literally just chopped sections out.
Oh, there's shit missing. There's a lot of shit missing. Like, there's a random nude scene involving involving lead singer from Extreme, Cult Boy's girlfriend, who's naked for no reason.
No, there's a they're doing the ritual murder. It's a ritual sacrifice to drain all her blood. Like, that actually makes sense.
Oh, I'm sorry. The thing that makes sense in the movie is that the blood gets drained for a ritual, I guess.
There's a reason, and that's to give it an R rating so people will be more interested in seeing it.
There it is.
Where do you think they got the Kesha glitter concoction?
Okay, first of all, if that's why they killed her, that chick bleeds glitter. Like, they either cut her open or...
Did you not notice the body she had and her acting ability? She was a professional stripper. I would put my life on it. So, yes, strippers do bleed glitter.
So, he added Wolfsbane and Eye of Daddy issues, and he had a magical concoction at the end of the movie, and...
That he's pouring into the paperweight
of Anubis, yeah. Which is, I'm sorry, look at that fucking thing. It is just a speaker that somebody put, like foam over. It's clearly a fucking speaker.
It's carved out of foam, and like they has to lift it in a way to make it look like it's actually rock.
Yeah.
But it's clearly, he doesn't realize how light it is.
By the fucking way.
The
thing we're not even mentioning about this third act is that because he's in sleepy comatose astral projection mode, in the one and only big fight between hero and villain, the hero's not even technically present for that fight.
No, he's not. In fact, they break their own rules. He's like, ha ha ha, you're an astral form, you can't hurt me. He goes, I can't. And he hurts him. And it's just like, fuck the rules. Because you know what? That's what you really want in your magic movie, is for magic not even to make any fucking sense.
A lesser film would explain why.
That should be the tagline on the fucking poster. Should be this picture of Jeffrey Combs with sleeves out to New Jersey, which gets mentioned 15 times in this movie.
They really
for some
do harp
reason.
On New Jersey.
They hate New Jersey in this movie. And then right under that would be exactly what Jeremy just said. A lesser movie would have explained that. That should be the tagline of this
film. I feel like they probably actually shot this in New Jersey and were trying to play it like it was New York. So it's like, if we keep mentioning over in New Jersey, people will think this is actually in New York City.
Do they give a specific neighborhood in the, or they just
they
say this is New York? They don't even say Manhattan. I mean, it's obviously supposed to be Manhattan, but
that we're flying over at one point. We're supposed to assume he's flying, but they didn't have budget for anything more than a copter shot.
Yeah, at one point she says something to the effect of, it's not like you can fly. And he just has this look on his face like, oh, can't I? But he says nothing, and it comes to nothing. So fuck off.
I love that part of the problem, you know, this cosmic hero has to deal with is, oh my God, I have to get to the museum, and I can't at this hour with this traffic.
He actually mentions New York traffic as being a problem.
Meanwhile, Bruce Willis in Die Hard with a Vengeance is like, really? Go fuck yourself. It's totally doable if you're not a moron.
You cut through the park.
I didn't say Park Drive. I said the park. We're talking about better movies right now because... It's breaking my brain. And one of the things, I wanted to go back to something Jeremy said about all the cops in this precinct being trigger happy.
Oh my God.
There's literally a scene where a character runs out of a room in the police station, and immediately, like from he goes around the corner and there's a door, and immediately out of that closet comes a detective wielding a shotgun. And the timing is such that he was holding and cocking that shotgun before there was ever anything going on in that station.
And he's the first one to follow him outside of the precinct. And as he's running down the street, the cop comes up and just shoots down the street in this general direction with a shotgun many, many dozens of feet away.
This is supposedly New York City you're firing into, Officer Trigger Happy. Like, maybe get this shit under control.
They actually almost have a joke about it where the moment that that Dr. Mordred is escaping and he uses the Rohypnol amulet to freeze everybody for a moment after they've just pulled out the guns, and then they 23 skidoo the fuck out of there, and then time restarts for them and one of the guys fires and the other guy like jumps. Like, what? Like, these people have just disappeared and he's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I'm
like,
sure this so is the shocked. First time that cop's ever fired at nothing. I'm sure that's the
in
first
the
time.
Building, in the building.
In the building. So, and we haven't mentioned the fact that, of course, for all of his failings as a Sorcerer Supreme, at least Dr. Mordred looks stunning doing this in his purple pantsuit.
It's pretty amazing. Although we did not mention the very best part of this movie.
I wait with bated breath.
Oh my God, the very best part of this movie is the opening credit sequence. when we see the balls, the sheer audacity of Charles Band to give himself. Yeah. Based on an idea by Charles Band. It's a real credit. Based on an original idea by Charles Band. That idea being, I know, let's make a Doctor Strange movie and call it something else. Let's rip off Doctor Strange. You know what? That's an original idea because no one else has thought of doing that.
Technically, it is an original idea. It just wasn't his original idea.
Based on an original idea by Stan Lee.
Hey.
Let's do a picture of Stanley and Steve Ditko at a cafe finally reconciling, and my ears are burning? What's going on here?
It's like Stanley's like, I don't take kindly to people ripping off my work and not giving me credit, but shut up, Ditko. Fuck you, Jack Kirby. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I being mean to the guy that made a career of stealing other people's shit?
About shitting on Stan Lee and the house that Lee built.
Every time I say Excelsior, I literally take $100 from Ditko's checking account.
He's 93 years old.
Yes, and I'll live forever on Kirby's money. That funeral paid for itself because I rolled him up in a newspaper and threw him out of the car.
Cool. Not cool.
Please send hate mail to Brian Salisbury.
Yes, please. Please email us. Stop doing this.
Junkfood@physicalrejects.com.
He's such a good man.
No, he's not. He's a popular man. There's a difference. Excelsior. So, Dr. Mordred, this is actually what I really love about movies like this, is that you get into this weird sort of cinema archaeology where you're just like, this is a thing that we have to unearth because it shouldn't exist in the first place. And then you really get your hooks into it and try to figure out why it exists. And in this case, it's just one of those situations where you had the rights when you started and then they disappeared. And in true, I mean, this is something I think Corman would be proud of, which is we could just scrap the whole thing, or since we're only going to spend $200 on this movie anyway, let's just change a bunch of names and run with it as if no one will notice.
I had this idea of this Bill O'Reilly-esque, fuck it, we'll do it live. You know, when they finally kind of realize that they know they were not going to get the rights. So, Cargill, do you know how many years passed between the time that they purchased the rights and the time they lost them?
I don't. I know that the junk bond sales was happening. I want to say it was 87 that those rights were all sold. So, like, he literally, and knowing Charles Band, he probably bought, you know, a short-term option. Like, I'll give you guys, like, $5,000 for the rights to Doctor Strange for 3 years. And they're like, all right, fuck it. Nobody else is asking for Doctor Strange. Because let's face it, these rights were up in the 80s, and special effects were not in the place where you could make a proper Doctor Strange movie. Like, Doctor Strange was too weird, and you could never meet the expectations that the art of the comics had. Like, it wasn't like the X-Men where, you know, as long as you have a guy holding, you know, claws in his hands and it looks like they're coming out from between his fingers, that it's fucking Wolverine. Like, yeah, fuck yeah. No, there's some crazy shit that you have to do in a Doctor Strange story to nail Doctor Strange. And God, I hope we've accomplished that. I hope people think that we at least hit that target.
How many ravens are in your movie?
There are no ravens.
I feel like I'm a little skeptical. I'm dubious.
There's no Edgar Allan Poe references.
Dr. Dubious.
You know what? Much to my chagrin, there are no fossil dinosaur fights.
Damn it.
I kind of, like, there was part of me, like, when I was doing it, because I had already seen this, I kind of wanted to write one in as a big fuck you to Charles Band to be like,
I would love for him to try and sue you over that. I would love it.
No, we didn't steal it from your movie. Your movie has nothing to do with Doctor Strange, right? It's based on an original idea by Charles Band, right?
Dinosaur skeleton fight based on an original idea by Charles Band.
So I was thinking about this time I went to the museum with Ditko, and he's like, we should make a dino fight out of claymation. And I was like, fuck you, it's mine.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
So I was at Pepperidge Farm one time.
I love
time.
How every time you do your Stan Lee, it becomes more and more of a Family Guy character.
Excelsior!
Yeah, it's true. So on that,
front troop relievers. Okay, so we need to wrap this up.
We do.
This podcast is almost longer than the fucking movie.
It is. We're approaching longer than the Dr. Mordred movie, which I want to end it on this note, which I think brings it full circle. There's not much in the way of IMDb trivia on this movie. Big fucking surprise.
Oh, there's not much. There's all these extra features on the Blu-ray.
Oh my God.
Nothing to do.
Nothing to do. There's one where Shatner's interviewing Barbara Crampton, Jeffrey Combs, and Stuart Gordon, clearly about a movie that is not Dr. Mordred. And not only that, but Shatner can't even keep straight which fucking movie they're talking about.
Shatner's like
none
drunk.
Of the actors know either.
Yeah, no, they're
which movie are we talking about? I don't know which movie.
Because Shatner keeps saying stupid things like, well, let's talk about your movie that you did together.
Castle Freak.
And he has no idea that they've done multiple movies together.
Oh, this is like the infamous Danielle Harris appearance.
Now this is your first time in a horror film, right? Fuck off. At least Shatner.
We literally, for those of you junkies who haven't heard this story yet, we literally had a Q&A in town where Danielle Harris came and appeared with one of her films, and the question that was the first question
from the moderator, by the way, not from the audience, from the moderator.
So this is your first horror film, right?
Should have gotten the monitor instead of the moderator. But the one piece of trivia that I think is hilarious is that it says this movie was originally conceived as an adaptation for the Marvel Comics character Doctor Strange. Somewhere along the way, the rights to the name were lost and the script was retooled. Eventually, it was adapted in Doctor Strange 2016. According to IMDb, Cargill, your movie is adapted from Dr. Mordred. So,
what's more interesting about that is that 7 out of 7 people who read that found it interesting.
This is true.
Look,
100% interesting.
IMDb, it must be true. Like IMDb is irrefutable. It is law. Like if anything comes, like clearly that must be what happened.
Yeah,
I did 6 out of 10 on this.
That's true. 6 out of 10.
A sorcerer is not a god.
So that brings us to the junk food pairing, and I'm going to try something a little bit different with this one because
you've been doing beer for a month?
I've been doing beer for a month, and I didn't know. Watching this movie, I was so confused because there's a moment with like a mystical coffee machine for no fucking reason. Like, I was like, sure, fine, why not? But I wanted to kind of throw it up in the air a little bit, like, and just kind of ask you guys, while you're watching this movie and you're thinking about what it is and how it's a ripoff of Doctor Strange and all these other things, was there any particular snack food that you were craving or that you were thinking about or you think would be relevant to Dr. Mordred?
Oh, yeah. You know what I think Dr. Mordred is?
I would love to hear it because
Dr. Mordred is the zingers of cinema. It's not really a Twinkie. It would really like to be a Twinkie. But it's not a fucking Twinkie, and Dolly Madison keeps trying with the zingers, but it's you're not fooling anybody.
Well, I was thinking with the sheer amount of times they mention New Jersey in the film, I was thinking, well, what is New Jersey known for food? And really, it's nothing other than disco fries, which is just poor man's poutine.
Much like this is poor man's Doctor Strange.
Exactly. As a Minnesotan, and Minnesota is a suburb of Canada, I have to go with the poutine.
I love this. I love you guys both, like, completely. I didn't give them any notice whatsoever.
I actually thought about it.
And they conjured it out of thin air, something that Dr. Mordred would be doing if the special effects budget would allow him to do it more instead of just walking around and being generally creepy and saying things like, I know of an occult. He's evil and he's looking for the whole time I'm like, if I were this woman, I would be heading for the fucking exits because this guy is clearly Dr. Creeper. Well, thank you so much for listening to our episode on Dr. Mordred. We hope you will go out this weekend and see Dr. Strange, the arguably better version, better adaptation of this character.
Who knows? We haven't seen it.
That's true. We haven't yet. I don't want to speak out of turn and do something, you know, unethical. So I'll say maybe it's better than Dr. Mordred.
I've seen it. In fact, I went and saw it with Stan Lee last week, motherfucker.
So I was watching Dr. Strange with this C. Bob Cargill guy. So I stole the idea for Sinister, and now we're making it a 100-issue run.
His accent. Like, it's slowly becoming really, like, weird now.
This is how I sound when I'm stealing all your shit.
So definitely check out Dr. Strange. I don't know what happened there. Go see Dr. Strange. Do that. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us.
Yay,
and for showing up in town randomly.
There was a lot of planning involved, and thanks to Cargill's lovely wife, Jess, who helped keep this all a secret, for bringing four people down from Minnesota to surprise our good friend on his big weekend.
They all came down to watch Dr. Mordred with us just for this episode. That was the big draw, obviously. And Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
On Twitter, at Massaworm, MassaWyrm, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm.
Awesome. You can find...
You could go to the movie theater this weekend.
Oh, God. We're going to get sick of
this. You can't see it. For the listener at home, look, Cargill is making a grandiose gesture like he's at the Last Supper with his hand.
I'm just saying, I get to put out one thing a year, either a movie or a book. Once a year,
so
I put something out, and this just happens to be it. So I'm fucking talking about it on my goddamn podcast. Right. Yes, I got a movie opening this weekend. It's called Doctor Strange. I'd really like it if you guys went and saw it. Thank you very much.
Come see Jeffrey Combs in Doctor Strange this weekend at the Multiplex.
Sadly, no Jeffrey Combs. I would have loved
Fuck that. Come on.
Combs cameo would be fantastic.
One out of one Brian's find that disappointing.
If he was Doctor Strange's super. Oh.
Oh, my God. He's like Benedict Cumberbatch's landlord.
Oh, God. Could you please clean? Could you please fix this sink?
Too late for reshoots? God. Too late for reshoots? Probably too late for reshoots.
A little late.
Hey, but if you want to go back and hear more exciting information like that, you can check our... All right, bye-bye. Snoopy, but are you putting... Are you casting a spell on me, Mordred? Damn it. You can check out our back catalog of episodes. There it is on iTunes as well as Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And please consider becoming a patron, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema.
How close are we to kicking you in the balls?
We got there and then it backed off. So I'm waiting for it to climb back up that number. But I have already gotten a host of terribly wonderful suggestions from the patrons. So... Keep that we're really close again to that $300 mark. So every week that we are at that mark, I will do this taste test show where you guys will be able to send me movies that I have to watch and have to record a review for. And literally our email inbox, which by the way, yeah, we do have an email inbox, is now just choked full of links too. And I will say this, I was kind of proud of myself. Half of them I was like, yeah, I've seen that. I probably shouldn't. You know what? Pride is a dubious term there.
Has anybody tried to recommend Molly to you yet?
No.
It's Molly hot.
Molly hot.
Molly hot.
And that's what I want you to remember. Hot take. One.
Molly hot.
Two. Several hot takes in this episode. One, This Island Earth is apparently a good film.
Yes.
Two, Molly hot. And three, sometimes a copy of Doctor Strange is actually stranger than strange, but not nearly as fun to watch.